Okay. So it's my little brief presentation about some of the things that have been going on in Oaxaca over the last year or so, since the last time I was here and saw everybody. So we now have 15 communities connected to the network, which I think is down from 16 or 17. But the good news is that we have two new communities this year so far, and plans for many more in 2019. The guys there really streamlined the process, and we've dealt with a lot of problems that were holding up the rollout. So we expect that 15 to double by this time next year. Unfortunately, Talea de Castro, which was our flagship community, is offline for the time being, which was nothing really to do technically. It was more just, you know, problems, not really problems, but just issues in the community socially while they work stuff out there. So we can take a look at the map of, look at that. That's why you don't do this stuff live. And you forget to turn on your Wi-Fi. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I wrote a little script to pull the GPS coordinates off of all of the BTS. You know, not that they move around that much, but they do actually move around from time to time. Some of them have been moved, and you're going to see a picture in a little while about one that moved. So, you know, just to be sure where stuff is, and whenever they install a new one, I can, rather than having to like go into all various systems and check the GPS coordinates and write them down and parse them and everything, I just made a script that goes to all the sites, gets all the GPS coordinates, and writes them into a CSV that can be read by this, so you can kind of get an idea of how we are doing. This one here is new. We'll be looking at some pictures from this place in a little while. This is Nuyo. This is the only place that has three BTSs connected to the same BSC. And that's that. Need two hands.
Are you running the NIPB on one of the BTSs, or is it a separate?
No, it's a separate machine. So just I thought mainly a lot of pretty pictures, because we've been looking at a lot of code and stuff. And so this was Talea de Castro, previous to actually deciding to finally or temporarily shut down up there. The guys went up and moved the BTS up onto the top of a mountain that was between some other communities, in the hopes that we might kind of extend the coverage range. And I just thought, you know, it's interesting to take a look at the kind of gear we're using nowadays in terms of antennas, as opposed to what was there in the beginning. And the solar panels and, you know, the installation is looking a lot more, a lot less makeshift than it used to do, with some nice boxes and solar panels and chargers and batteries and stuff that you don't see in the picture, but they are there. So,
is there more up on the pole above those antennas?
No, I don't think so. It's quite a short mast up, because it's just on the top of a mountain. Not 100% sure. I haven't been there. So, you know, just quickly, we, you know, again, we haven't increased very much. We're still using the Sismo BTS 2050 in most places. There's a couple, two villages with the Fairwaves UM site, and one with the Sismo BTS 1020, and then there's that site Nuyo that has two Sismo BTS 2050s and one Fairwaves UM site. Still using the Osmo NIPI. Hopefully that won't be the situation by this time next year. Still using LCR, and FreeSwitch and Camaleo handles the dial plan and the VoIP side of it. So I took a look at some call stats, you know, just to get an idea of how things are performing. There's not an awful lot of data here, but, you know, this is our busiest community with 800 or so active users, where you get something like, okay, it's 3,060, the average number of local calls happening there per day. That's completed local calls where the BLEG was answered, with an average duration of 43 seconds and a maximum duration of 1 hour, 48 minutes, which kind of some kind of an indicator that, you know, stuff's sort of working nicely. Also have a maximum duration for an incoming call of 3 hours, 19 minutes. So people are really talking for a long time.
I think originally, early on, there was some comment that at least one of the communities, probably was local one, decided that if you call for longer than 5 minutes, it gets hung up and you should rather go there and walk there. So that's just one community, or is that rule been abandoned, or what's this?
It hasn't quite been abandoned. I'm going to touch on it a little later on. Yeah, so yeah, I just recently actually removed that restriction on 5 minute calls, but based on certain conditions. So yeah, outgoing calls, more calls actually, but less duration in general on the outgoing in that community. So this is San Pedro Llaneri, which is a new community just online since the end of March. And it's got 800 or so active users. In March anyway, there was 100. Maximum duration of an incoming call, 2 hours, 10 minutes. You know, it's all working. Again, the average duration of a local call is around 1 minute. So people are using it for short, short coordination messages or whatever. Yutanduchi de Guerrero, which is online since the beginning of March, so slightly more, another month there for them, and they have 200 active users, and again, similar stats. That community is still running, it's not running the latest version of our call. Limiting code, so you can see the maximum duration is 5 minutes on the local calls, which is the way it was. So this was some, I asked last week just for some ideas about what people wanted to communicate, and they said, well, this is some of the things that people said that they had coordinated using the mobile phone network. One of them was putting out of fires in the local region. An operation coordinated help with the help of the mobile network. Again, we have the reported calling for help related to being bitten by a snake out in the countryside. I don't know if that's the same one that happened before or if it happened again, but the information was given to me as in this has happened again. And there was the coordination after a direct lightning strike to one of the communities, which obviously didn't hit the tower. I don't know what it hit, but it didn't hit the tower. Well, yeah, we've done doing a lot of work on that. So I had a little story from a place called San Pedro el Alto in relation to coverage planning or not. So this is San Pedro el Alto from the satellite image. And this is the zoomed in version from what we looked at earlier on. So you can see San Pedro over here. And this was the decision to put the tower here. The reason for that being that folks wanted to get some coverage down here, and they also wanted to try to cover something which is down here. You don't really quite see it. And originally, we put a Fairwaves UM site up there with a couple of omnidirectional antennas. So that was in, yeah, OK. And that is the kind of what that site looks like. The tower, there's a bunch of solar panels on it. You can see the original antenna rig on the ground there. Somebody's holding it up. That was hauled up as a single unit onto the top of the tower.
On the previous picture, the roof is not big enough to have enough sunlight, so you need to put more solar cells on the antenna itself.
Yeah, it's a good question. I have no idea why they mounted the solar panels on the tower. I suppose that there is some reason for it, that they got an extra half an hour or something. We were really, really trying to optimize the solar here because there wasn't enough capacity to get the system running through the night without without powering off. So I don't know. It's, I suppose it's possible that there's a shadow from a mountain or something around, and by putting them a little bit higher up, they got some more time. But I don't know if even the angle on them at that time would really make that much difference. But yeah, wind's a good thing. Let's look at some wind, because So yeah, that's the rig up on the tower originally. So the thing is that there's some trouble with not ETC shadow, rather shadow ETC. This is the center of San Pedro el Alto, and this was one place that was noted that they were having problems with coverage, basically, in the shadow of this church here, which is quite tall. You can see the shadow from the sun, even though the sun was probably quite high when this picture was taken. So in this region here, people were having trouble using the service, just, you know, RF problems.
And I guess people stay on the shadow while you're
in
the bathroom, right?
Yeah, well, probably. So yeah, so you had a shadow. So yeah, okay, that was just my showing back like the tower again. So then problem with what? Tlaloc? No, Tlaloc. Anybody knows what Tlaloc is? Or who?
Something.
Yeah, meet Tlaloc. So that's Tlaloc. And this is somebody's interpretation of a more modern version of Tlaloc. You might get an idea what Tlaloc is about from these spiky looking things coming out of the head. So Tlaloc is basically the Aztec god of rain and storms and water and stuff like that. This is Tzahui. This is the Mixtec god of rain, who would be similar. It's got kind of the same face thing going on there. So anyway, this is what I reckon is what happened, is that Tzahui and this one, and this is Piltzintecuhtli. Piltzintecuhtli is listed as, written about as relating to the planet Mercury, which in Western astrology would be related to communications. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of the concept of Mercury retrograde in computing, but it's, if you mix sort of spiritual astrology stuff, apparently everything goes wrong with communications and electronics and wires when Mercury is retrograde, which means it's apparently going backwards in the sky. But anyway, so Piltzintecuhtli is the closest thing that I could find to a communications god in the Aztec, although we're in the Mixteca. This is not really Aztec, it's Mixtec stuff. But so I don't know, I think Piltzintecuhtli and either Tlaloc or somebody got together, and this is what happened when they decided to have some fun. Basically half the mountain fell down, and along with it, it took one of the anchors of the tower, and the result was we got some nice antenna down tilt. Which was one of our ideas was, you know, maybe get some down tilt on those omnis and send the signal a little bit down more towards the church rather than bouncing off the hill behind it. And but yeah, so so anyway, there were some lessons maybe from San Pedro el Alto, which I think was maybe the original error was trying to cover too much area with only one BTS. One radio, which ultimately resulted in some many costly trips out there to try to do things which was involved extending the top of the tower, which involved cutting the trees, which involved actually going out and changing the antennas, I think, three times, and then ultimately taking down the UM site and replacing it with a light cell one for more power, which then involved more solar. And I think that we could have maybe done something else, like covered in those shadowed areas in the village by, if we had something like a smaller low power BTS that we could have placed in the village, or even the Nano 3G would work, except for we don't have a license to use that 5 megahertz of spectrum. And then also required would be 2G, 3G handover, and so, you know, just wanted to say that, you know, that thanks for all the work that's going on, especially maybe on the software E1, which is also related to how we might get cheaper, although maybe not small, but cheaper BTS equipment into a situation like that. And I think that the other lesson there was to and you know, never do anything that gets near what the supposed capacity of the tower might be, even though, yeah, you can't really account for gods and storms. But we did extend the top of that tower maybe a little bit beyond what it was originally designed to be used for. So,
question?
Mm.
Did the down tilt help with the church problem?
Well, I think at that point the equipment was turned off and people went out there and somebody climbed up the wobbly tower and took it down and they fixed up that, and I'm not really too sure. I mean, I think at that they made it maybe change to some directional antennas after that, which was probably a much better idea, to forget about trying to cover the backside and actually just beam it down at the village. So we need to go a bit faster. So advancements with lightning protection. This is a recent community that pointed out on the map, San Pedro Yaneri. This was the site. And that's the same picture, more or less, with the grounding radials, trenches for grounding radials dug in. And the lots of rebar all tied together with lots of binding wire and big, you don't really see what's under the ground there, but that's all connected to the radials, and watching the cement dry. And that's the tower from another angle that was put up there on that one. And we haven't had any losses with lightning protection in the last year, so whatever our lightning guru is doing down there, he's doing it right.
Do you know if there are lightning strikes?
Yeah, there's lots of lightning strikes in the region. It's during the rainy season there. There's lightning storms all the time, and the thing is that most of the time, whatever we would be putting up around these regions would be the highest thing around. So we do tend to attract them. Okay, so other work that's been going on there, this alongside that lightning protection stuff, we designed solar systems by, you know, sourcing the cheapest equipment we could get. We rather than using the POEs that come with the Ubiquiti gear, we decided to, well, actually people in Oaxaca made a little board that the POE integrated into it that also powers the BTS using, you know, 24 volts from the battery systems. Yeah, I just wanted to note that we've recently seen some trouble with those light cell ones becoming unresponsive. They just seem to stop. I need to investigate that a little bit more. I don't really know what's going on with them, but they just seem to crash and they need to require a hard power reset to come back. Did some work on the free switch end of things with just kind of user experience and enhancements by mapping all of the Q850 reasons to audio messages so that people get informed that the user is busy or the phone is not available, or this other thing that we had, that when you call from one community to another community and the backend VPN is trying to sending SIP UDP packets, there's no real feedback mechanism, and this can go on for quite a while. People might be a little bit confused about what's happening, so I implemented a different kind of ringback tone, so they get an instant ringback tone in the case that the person they're calling is not local but they're in another community, and then that ringback will change to the normal ringback once the actual phone signals back that it's ringing in the other community. And then also I was doing a lot of work in the morning time here when it tends to be 3, 4, 5 a.m. there, and I noticed people making calls and being bothered by this 5-minute hang-up. So I said, well, this is pointless because there's all the radio resources are free. We might as well just not hang up the call at 5 minutes if there's a certain number of channels available. So basically just look at how many channels are available, and for the moment I just set it to, well, depending on the community, but it even can be just as low as 2 if there's no channels in use and you're the first call establishing on the system. Well, then don't limit the time on it, and it hasn't resulted yet in any notable increase in calls not connecting for lack of radio resources. So what else is going on? We also got some subsidized access to some more DID capacity and channels from people in Mexico City, and we got this access to VSAT service to play with. And we've been developing this kind of muxing solution on the SIP side, which kind of to get around this problem of what we were talking about before with the Osmo Media Gateway and the MSC and the BSC, because essentially we have an MSC in each community, and we don't want, want Osmux between the Media Gateway and the MSC, but we actually want it on the other side, on the SIP side of that. So we've been looking at some stuff, again, same kind of UDP header optimization, but with another little bit of RTP header prediction in there.
What's DID? Just to be the question. What's DID?
DID are the direct inward incoming dial. What?
Inward dial.
Yeah, direct inward dial. The numbers, real PSDN, real world numbers that people can call to connect to the community. So. This I wanted to mention. This is the Tink VPN that we've been using in switch mode since we began. I've started mixing Tink 1.0 and Tink 1.1, which is not really stable. And I discovered something one time in this picture here, this is like this WISP provider that we use. These are all communities that are connected to it. You can also see that maybe a little bit better here, in that these are all communities that connect to their data center, and then we have kind of a connection out, but they also all connect to the data center. But anyway, it's not a huge big deal. The only thing that I discovered was that Tink all of a sudden started deciding to send all the traffic from this node via this one. And I was going, what? Why is it doing that? Because this was the last thing that we wanted, because this node is actually far away, like 5-6 unreliable Wi-Fi hops out into the mountains, and it starts sending all the traffic out here, and then from there back to the internet. And the reason was that in Tink 1.1, they decided to say, well, if I have a meta connection to a node which is also connected in some other way to the network, then I'll drop that and I'll only maintain the connections to nodes that nobody else has a connection to. And these ones being Tink 1.1, they don't drop their connection, but this one was dropping its connection. And then when it wanted to send data to something it can't reach directly, it was choosing this one. And it's probably quite obvious why it was choosing this one here, if you can read it. But I kind of dived into the source code and said, oh, right, alphabetical sort. Okay. So that kind of prompted me to look into Tink a little bit, which is something that I've wanted to do for a long time. And I think I'm going to start hacking on it a little bit and see if I can optimize it for our use case. Because in Nuyo, which is the only community that we have that has a satellite backup at the moment, although this is one of the parts that we will see lots more communities with satellite, possibly satellite only. But in this case, we have this terrestrial Wi-Fi provider that is intermittent. And so when that goes down, we change to the satellite. And somebody's currently doing that switch over manually by unplugging this one here and plugging the other one into it, which is kind of annoying, because then when the terrestrial comes back up, it's often not being used for some time, and the latency on the satellite connection is in and around 800 milliseconds, and it also really supports only 4 concurrent calls currently. We don't have any muxing or UDP header compression or anything going on that link. So in relation to Tink, what I sort of realized is that, you know, if you run a Tink here and you run a Tink here, Tink will actually find its way. If this link goes down, Tink will find its way into the mesh network via whatever route is still available to it. And so the things I just want to hack on is maybe optimizing that in terms of the timeouts and how long it's waiting before it decides that this one is going down, before it might move over here, and then we might actually be able to do like a live in-call handover on the layer below the VPN without dropping the call.
So I
just thought about it, okay, this is not an uncommon problem. So I've seen that some people used, for example, OLSR, which is used on Wi-Fi networks, over some tunnels, but not over Tink, because Tink does not know about link cost and so on, or so far I understood Tink does not know link cost, so people used what is this new tunnel, new VPN protocol, the link
WireGuard.
So WireGuard plus all this R to balance the links and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have seen such setups or?
Yeah, I saw hints the other day. I was just looking at something and I was like, yeah, okay, I really have to go and check all of that out, and maybe it's time to look at something else. But at the same time, I like this Tink project. It seems a little bit dead in the last few months. The mailing list is very quiet sometimes, and the main developer doesn't really seem to be around, but then there are spurts of activity on it, and I don't know. Yeah, WireGuard for sure. I should really have a look at it, but I don't know.
I think it's more likely that you have link cost in your VPN setup, which would probably solve your satellite link and your Wi-Fi link.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I wanted to try to do is not change the tech around for the people in Oaxaca, because they know certain things, and it's, you know, people there are take some little bit of time to learn some new stuff, and it's disruptive to change the tech. So, but yeah, I will look into that.
Just because you mentioned OLSR, on the Freifunk, I was also having a lot of problems with OLSR because it only counts the number of hops, and it was often routing to an internet uplink that was very bad. So this might not be the optimal solution either. That's all I'm trying to say.
I wrote this in here as well. This was kind of an interesting one because we had a conversation between these people in this data center in Mexico City and the people who are actually providing some SIP service to us. And they're kind of not that far away from each other in terms of kilometers, but they were just too far away from each other to be able to run any new links. It would have been prohibitively expensive. So it turns out that we actually have to pay for... That's not an expensive link in terms of rental or data traffic. It's not metered, but we pay quite a lot of rent for that in order to actually send the traffic all the way to Texas and back instead of just staying in Mexico City. But I will see what happens with that. So I think I'm nearly out of time. I've got 50 seconds because I was 50 seconds late. And I wanted to just stick this on because it's quite pretty. And I don't know who made it. I just saw it. It was sent to me. Just some pictures, really. The audio is not really. It's in German. Okay, that's all I've got for today. What is TIC? It's Telecomunicaciones Indígenas Comunitarias, which probably doesn't need a translation. It's also it's an acronym that's it's stolen from, well, it's not really stolen, but it's also in use. It's a bit confusing. The TIC. What's the common understanding of TIC? There's
no any other. I mean, does TIC as in TTICK as in the animal?
No. There's a
technology.
Maybe it's only Spanish. Yeah.
For the
term
info.
Any more, anybody else? No? Good. Thank you. Thank you.